This is Software Engineering Radio, the podcast for professional developers on the web at se-radio.net. SE Radio brings you relevant and detailed discussions and interviews on software engineering topics every 2 weeks. Thanks to our audience and the partners listed on our website for supporting the podcast.
Welcome to a new show on Software Engineering Radio. On the microphone is Michael, and my guest today is Lisa Crispin. She's an expert on agile testing, which is also the topic we're going to talk about. Welcome, Lisa, on the show.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to get a chance to talk about my favorite subject.
Would you mind introducing yourself briefly?
Sure. I've been in software development for quite a long time and testing for quite a long time, and I started with my first Agile team back in 2000. So I've been on several Agile teams, big and small, over the years, and I've mainly been on teams that were developing Java or .NET web applications. So that's where my main expertise is, but I've written 2 books about Agile testing, Testing Extreme Programming, and Agile Testing, A Practical Guide for Testers and Agile Teams. And in the process of that, I've met and talked to lots of teams around the world to find out how they do Agile testing. And so it's been very interesting to see that most people run into the same problems and come up with similar solutions. So I feel like there are, although every project is different, I feel like there are some generalizations that we can make.
Marcus and I would call those generalization patterns. I mean, did you document it as patterns or?
No, we didn't really use pattern terminology, but you're right. They would be patterns.
Okay. I prepared a set of questions that we also shared up front. So let me get started with some organizational questions. Like, what happens really to the role of the tester? I mean, if you compare classical software development with agile software development, what are the major changes for the role of a tester?
Yeah, shifting from traditional software development to agile software development is really, it's really a shock to most testers, because you go from being a separate test team, and where testing is a phase that comes after analysis and design and development, to a situation where the whole team is suddenly thinking about quality, and the developers, all the developers, are doing testing as well. And it can be, testers may have the reaction, well, if the developers are writing all these tests, what do I do? And there's no longer a real testing phase. We have to actually even write tests up front. So it's integrated with development. So that's a big change. And although some organizations keep their testing team separate in the organization, the testers are still going to work very closely with the programmers and all the other members of the software development team. And testers can't just sit in their cubes and wait for work or wait for a requirements document. They're actually having to be active and collaborating with people, both programmer on the programming side and on the business side. So that's really the main difference, is the going from a separate activity to an integrated part of development where everyone on the team is thinking about it, which is good, but it's a good thing, but it can be a scary thing.
And they are part of the team, of the, for example, Scrum team?
Yes, ideally they are part of the Scrum team. There are some situations where it makes sense to have a separate test team. For example, if you're testing embedded software and perhaps you only have a chance to test with the other parts of the system, not during development, but after development, or you have to coordinate, or you have certain specialties, there might still be a reason to have a separate test team, but your Scrum team definitely needs to include testers. And even if there is a separate team, they're going to work very closely with the development team.
So I guess when it's such a change for the testers, some of them might be scared and some of them might be excited. What did you find most?
Well, I was very excited to get started in it, because I first read Kent Beck's book, XP Explained, Extreme Programming Explained. And when I read that book, I saw that it was completely focused on quality and completely focused on people and helping people do their best work. And having worked in a traditional environment for years, I've worked on successful waterfall projects, but in the late 90s, things started to move so fast that traditional waterfall development just couldn't keep up. If you were developing a web application, you could not get your software out before your competitors, and so with a waterfall scenario. So I was very eager to try it to see if this is how we can deliver value in time for our business. So I had a positive attitude, but then when I got on the team and I was the only tester and the programmers were actually not doing a very good job of their unit testing, I was completely overwhelmed. But the biggest shift was I had gone from feeling I was in charge of quality because I was, you know, the director of the QA department, to suddenly realizing that it's the customer who's really in charge of quality in terms of the external business quality. It's the customer who decides, you know, what needs to be in the software, what really needs to work. And that was a huge shift for me. I was quite a quality police person when I was working on a more traditional team, which is not good even on a traditional team. But a lot of us get into that mindset of, well, I'm not going to let it go to production until I say it's okay. And in Agile, you really are taking the role of an information provider to say, here's what I've learned about the product, and here's the information that the business needs now to use to decide whether or not they can release this product.
So you mentioned police. Why isn't that good to be, to have a, still a police in the HR world? I mean, I was thinking, well, if I would have somebody as a, acting as a quality police in my project, I should be very happy.
Well, it's not a very collaborative stand to take to say, well, I'm the boss of quality, and I would rather take the mindset of I'm helping to make the software better. I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, find a bug and say, ha ha ha, I found a bug in your code, you better fix it, because that doesn't build a very good relationship. And programmers, actually, they don't want their bugs to go out to production either. So the earlier I can get the programmer to sit down with me and say, hey, show me what you developed, even before you check it in, and let's look at how it looks. And maybe I'll have a question about, I'm not sure that does what the customer really wanted to do. And we can talk about it together right then, rather than the programmer's all done coding and he thinks he's done a pretty good job, and then I come back with a long list of bugs that I found. That's very disheartening. And I think it's much better to say that we're all going to work hard to make sure we develop a high quality software.
Mm-hmm. So what would you recommend as typical work split between the developers who are then testing as well and the testers?
Well, there are definitely areas where they each focus. The unit tests should definitely be the job of the programmers, because unit tests aren't really for testing, they're for designing the code. And so the person writing the code needs to be writing those tests, and hopefully writing them up front with a test-driven development pattern. If programmers aren't very experienced with writing tests, I've had the experience where I could sit down and pair with that programmer and help them learn more about how to write good tests. But once they got the hang of it, they it was better that they did that in pairing with another programmer. But sometimes pairing with a tester, that can work out really well. But that's definitely their focus, is what Kent Beck calls the internal quality. Is this code robust? Is it well designed? Is it testable? Do the little pieces integrate with each other in the right way? So that's what the programmer is looking at, and how to implement the functionality. Where the testers tend to be big picture people, so we look at how does this particular piece of functionality we're working on fit in the bigger scheme of the whole application or the whole system. How will the customers use it? How will the end users use it? What's the business value that it's providing? And we look at all aspects of it, including the technical aspects. And a lot of what we do is to ask questions of, ask the business people, you know, how do they give us examples of how this should be used, or how you see this functionality being used, or how should it not behave? What are things it should not do? And then writing acceptance tests with them, with their input, that helps the programmer see the big picture of here's kind of the forest, and now the programmer is going to fill in the trees. So the tester takes the more big picture aspect of it, and the programmer is focused on the technical implementation. So we come from two different viewpoints, and I think that's good. I think the more diversity we have on our team, the better job we're going to be able to do, because we have all these different viewpoints to bring together. And where our viewpoints mismatch, then those are areas where we know those are potential problem areas, and we need to talk about those areas and make sure we have them solid.
You mentioned that developers are using the unit tests basically for designing their code. So is it also fair to say that the testers are involved during requirements clarification in order to really end up with requirements that are precise, concise, and that could then easily translate into acceptance criteria?
Exactly. The testers really need to be in on all the discussions between programmers and business people about how is this functionality going to work. And then what I really like to do is ask for examples. You know, give me a concrete example. Draw a workflow on the whiteboard, or in a financial application, give me a spreadsheet that shows the algorithm that you want us to code. And so then I can take those examples and turn them into tests, and hopefully even into tests that can later be automated. And so those really give the programmer a distinct picture of what exactly does the functionality need to do. So, and of course, it's an ongoing process. What we think at the beginning of the iteration of what we think a story should be, maybe either we don't understand it quite right, or when the customer sees the result as we're going along, says, oh, you know, I really, that's not exactly what I want. You know, it needs to be a little bit different. So it's an iterative process of let's code a little bit of it. Let's look at how that looks. And if it looks good, let's keep going. If it's not quite right, let's go back and fix it.
So changing the topics a bit, I would like to ask you about test automation. How much test automation is good for my project? Is there a general rule of thumb available, or on what kind of facts does it depend?
Well, of course, a lot of teams start out with no automation at all. So it can be a daunting task to think about, well, how are we going to even get started with this? But in the long run, I really believe that you need to have 100% of your regression tests automated. Any test that you're going to do every iteration or every build, so that you can always know that you haven't had any regression failures. So hopefully we should be doing this many times a day as we check in new code. And the only way to do that is by automating it. If you have any manual tests, they'll take too long to do, and you're likely to either forget to do them, or you're going to blow them off because you're going to be too busy. And you're going to say, well, I don't think we touched that code, so let's just not do that test. And of course, it's not something you can start overnight, but it's definitely the goal that all my teams have had. And the current team I'm on, we were able to automate at least smoke tests for the regression within about 8 months. And then within about a year, we were able to automate 100% of our regression tests for each and every story that we developed. So it's definitely a process that takes a while to do, but you really have to make the investment. Because if you don't automate your regression tests, you'll spend all your time doing manual regression testing. That means you'll never have the time for the most important testing, which is the exploratory testing, which is usually mostly a manual process. That exploratory testing is where we really learn about the software and where we really find the really tricky situations of, we didn't realize that this piece of code that we changed would affect this functionality over here. We didn't even think those were related. Or we never foresaw the user scenario of doing these particular steps and it blows up the software. So those kind of tests, you don't have time to do them if you're spending all your time going through manual regression test scripts over and over. And as I say, it is hard to get started. And so what I always tell teams, and this is what my teams have always done, is when you start out and you don't have automated regression tests, then the whole team pitches in the last couple days of the iteration and splits up all the manual regression test scripts and does the manual regression testing. So that means the programmers, the scrum master, the database people, the system administrators, whoever is on that team, is assisting with the manual regression testing. And I found that that's great motivation to everyone on the team to start thinking about how should we design this code so that we can easily automate our regression tests.
Yeah, I can easily imagine that.
It works great.
So how do I know I have sufficient regression tests?
Well, that's a really good question. What I do is to start by having the customers tell me what are the areas of the application that are most critical and absolutely have to work 100% of the time. And I have them prioritize those areas. And the first thing I want to do with my automated test is to cover those areas. And then once those areas are covered, then I want to start automating regression tests for every new piece of functionality. So we may still have some legacy code that's not covered by automated tests, but if we're not having a problem with the legacy code, or if there are workarounds for any problems that do crop up, and it's really not worth spending the resources to automate the test for that, because maybe we know we're going to go back and replace that code later or redesign that code later. So some people would use maybe a test coverage tool, but I find test coverage is often, it's a good metric to have. It's a good information to know, especially to know if our coverage is going up or down. But it's misleading, because if you left out some functionality altogether, your coverage percent is not going to tell you that. And every new story that we do, we automate tests and we do a risk analysis to decide, is this enough coverage? Should we include a test for this edge case, or do we feel like either the edge case is unlikely to happen, or if it does happen, it's not a big deal, so we're not going to spend the resources to run an automated test for that. So it's a continual analysis of do we feel like we need that test or not. And of course, when we do miss an edge case and it does happen in production, we're definitely going to go back and automate a test for that. We don't want the same bug to come back and haunt us again.
A question that comes up regularly in my projects is, how much automated testing is meaningful for the UI parts or UI intensive stuff? Of course, I shouldn't test my business logic through the UI, but what is with all the UI related logic? Can I test that only manually? When and how much automated testing is useful in that area?
Well, there's a big controversy in the Agile world about that right now. Some people think you shouldn't automate through the UI at all, or that you should never automate end-to-end tests, that your tests should be at lower levels where it's more efficient to run, to write and maintain those tests. And I can certainly see that argument. I've definitely personally gone overboard in automating more tests than I really needed, and it was hard to maintain. On the other hand, and depending on your application, you know, how important the GUI is, if there could be some logic in the GUI that needs to be tested, or in the case of a legacy system, it may be very difficult to test, especially for a new team. It may be very difficult to know how to test at the unit level or behind the GUI. So I do like to automate GUI tests, but I keep them at a sort of what I call a smoke test level. I definitely test automated tests for the happy path. I automate tests for maybe obvious error conditions. For example, if it's a form where you input some fields and press enter, I do a test where you didn't input any data and you press enter and verify all the error messages that come back. But I'm definitely not going to spend time trying to test every particular case. And that's even true in my functional tests behind the GUI. As I may do all those tests with the automated tool during development, but I may not keep all those tests in my automated suite, just because I have to think about maintaining, you know, my team has tens of thousands of tests, and so you have to think about how you're going to maintain those tests. And you also, the other really important thing that people say, well, don't automate through the GUI because it becomes a nightmare to maintain the test. But if you've picked a good tool that's suitable for your environment and a tool that allows you to apply good code design techniques to your test automation so that you extract duplicate code out into a class or a module or whatever your tool provides for that, and you don't repeat yourself, you just apply all the, you, each test has a clear purpose, you don't put too many steps in each test. All these good things that would apply just to the same way you write regular production code, then you can keep your tests maintainable. So I think what happens a lot is people see teams that have automated thousands of tests and they spend all their time maintaining them. And their reaction to that is, well, you better not automate through the GUI. But the truth is, the lesson you should learn is you'd better have a good test automation design and make sure that people doing that automation have the right skills.
Mm-hmm. Next question is on illities. How do you test for illities? Well, of course, illities could be of all kinds, stability first, but that should be covered with the unit tests. But maybe you have also some thoughts, some additional thoughts on that. Next is performance. How do you test performance best? And then I have a special question about usability, but let's defer that for a second.
Okay. It was interesting. After I had been doing Agile for maybe 6 years, I was at a conference and I was speaking with another presenter who was a specialist in performance testing. And I said to him, why don't I ever see you at Agile conferences? And he says, because there are never any sessions at Agile conferences about performance testing or any of the illity testing. And I thought about it for a minute, and at that time he was right. We were so focused on test-driven development and acceptance test-driven development that we were really only being concerned with functionality and not the extra-functional or non-functional tests, of whatever you want to call them. And so that was kind of an aha moment for me, and I started focusing more on that. And what has really helped me and our teams is to use the Agile testing quadrants, which is something Brian Merrick came up with back in 2003, where you categorize your tests so that you can make sure you plan to do all the different types of tests you need to do. So the illity testing falls mostly into quadrant 3 and some into quadrant 4. And by looking at this quadrants as we're doing our test planning and our iteration and release planning, we say, you know what, we're going to need to do performance testing, and do we have a system where we can do performance testing? Or we need to do security testing. Does anyone have the expertise to do that kind of testing? So part of it is just planning to make sure you budget in time to do it and that you have the right resources to do it. Obviously, testing for things like usability could be hard. Well, you didn't want to talk about that yet, but testing for some of the illities may be hard to do until the code's actually written. But you can do some testing in the prototyping phase before you even write any code. So I really like to use a lot of paper prototypes or prototyping on the whiteboard, sit with the customer and say, okay, the first screen will look like this, and then we'll press a button and we'll go to another screen that looks like this, and then where would they like to go from there? And we can draw that out on a whiteboard, or we can use paper and do what they call Wizard of Oz testing, where somebody pretends to be the computer and reacts to whatever buttons are pressed, quote unquote pressed, on the paper. A lot of that you can do even before you write the code, so that's really nice. Performance testing, that may be something you need to do even before you do functional testing, because performance may be the most important or critical aspect of the application. So you really have to think about up front, when are you going to do these different types of tests, and do you have the people that you need to do them? Nobody on my team was particularly good at security testing, so I bought a book and did the best that I could, and I actually did find some problems. But eventually we did contract with a company that specializes in that and did a security audit of our application. So sometimes you may even need to go outside for your resources.
Okay. For performance, I was thinking along the lines of continuous performance trending. Do you do that in your development projects?
Well, we do some via monitoring. So we actually monitor the production application and keep track of the performance there. We use JMeter as our performance test tool, and we do run performance tests from time to time, but it's not a big issue for us. We don't have very many users, and it's rare that we'd have a large load on the system. Most of our load on the system is actually internal batch load on the system. But, for example, recently we changed web application servers. We changed from iPlanet to GlassFish, and we had to do performance testing to make sure that that was going to perform, that it was going to scale the same. And so we did do a big performance testing effort. It can really catch you, even little things. We had one little report in the system that we knew was terribly inefficient and slow, but we thought, oh, nobody will use that. And one day the site came down because enough people ran that report at the same time that she brought the site down. So you can't ignore those considerations. You really need to think about it. But performance testing is definitely not my personal area of expertise. And so but I knew we needed to do it. And so when I finally talked my team into understanding that it was important that we do it, another tester on the team took it upon himself to evaluate some tools and really educate himself on it. And that's the kind of thing you need to do. You need to budget time to say, okay, now we're going to need to do this type of testing. Can someone learn how to do it? Do we need to bring in outside expertise? Some big shops that I've worked with had a team of people that did security and reliability and performance testing, and they went around to the different Scrum teams and helped them with that or trained them to do that testing for themselves. So it's something that you have to spend a lot of time and thought into how you're going to get it done.
Okay, and they are the ones then also who monitor the metrics and would hit the stop button, stop the line button or something like that.
Right, right.
So what is the most difficult thing to test?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say that to me, the ability type things are the most difficult. Performance testing isn't too hard because there's so many good tools for it. But things like usability testing, security testing, where most people, that's a specialty. And of course, in Agile, we tend to all be generalists, so we don't necessarily have those specialties. And it can really hurt a small team like ours. And usability is a great case in point. I don't think our site is a very good site in terms of usability because we don't have any experts on our team and we have not taken the time to do that kind of testing. And we hired an expert one time to help redesign part of the system, and that person turned out to not be very good. That's the worst part of our system. So those kind of soft, I guess I would call them soft areas because they're harder to measure, I think those are the most difficult thing. It's easy to test something that's easy to measure. And we know it's black and white, it passed or it failed. But when you have to make a judgment about it, I think that's a little trickier.
We talked already about regression tests. Now, regression tests play a big role in continuous integration. What are the typical challenges about and around continuous integration?
Well, continuous integration, I think people get a lot more scared of it than they need to be. To me, it's so important. And I don't think any team, agile or otherwise, should proceed without stopping and getting in continuous integration going right away. I was on teams back in the 90s doing waterfall that had continuous integration. It's a critical practice. And in the same way that nowadays you would never not do source code control, right? Everybody knows that source code control is very important. But 10 or 15 years ago, I worked on teams that didn't have it. And we're just starting to use it. I think continuous integration is the same way. People just haven't realized how critical it is. But in another 5 years, I think that you won't find teams that don't have it. And it's not that hard to implement. There's just so many good tools on the market. Most programmers can get a continuous integration going pretty easily. Most test tools have plugins for the most popular continuous integration tools. And you've got to have that feedback. It just isn't possible to proceed without it. And also from the perspective of a tester, I don't have anything to test unless I have some kind of package that I can deploy, right? I need the software to test. I can't test it on the developer system. I can't, you know, sometimes I could build it myself perhaps, but some applications are hard to build on a local environment. I need something I can deploy. And so that's the other critical reason to have continuous integration is to produce a jar file or a WAR file or whatever that I can then deploy on the test environment, or even better, have the continuous integration deploy it for me on the various test environments. You just can't work without it. You just have got to have that feedback. And we've certainly spent a lot of time making sure that we have the right continuous integration for our team. It's something we revisit every 6 months or so to say, is this good or do we need to go to the next level? Do we need even better feedback? Do our tests need to run faster? Because as you add tests, of course, your jobs run slower. So we are really focused on that all the time to make sure we're getting the feedback that we need. And I feel like it's just super critical for every team.
Mm. You mentioned already the challenge of keeping the test duration at an acceptable level. What is an acceptable level to you, and how can you keep it at that level? Because especially with large systems, I mean, you have inherently so many tests that the duration becomes very long. And as you go along, you add and add and add tests, and the duration just becomes too long in order to provide fast feedback for the developers.
Right. You know, it's certainly easier on a smaller project like ours. It's maybe 250,000 lines of code. And we keep our unit tests running under 10 minutes. And when it gets longer than 10 minutes, we look to see what can we do to make it faster. Do we just need to run it on a faster machine? Are there some tests that need refactoring because they're too long? Originally, in the early days, we wrote unit tests that access the database. Well, that's not really a unit test, and so we move those tests to a different suite. Running tests in parallel is a real common way to get around the performance problem. And then if you do work in a big organization, I was working last year for a company with about 140 developers and quite a complex and diverse product. And each team could build its own code. And so you could still have your continuous integration for your team's component of the system so that you could keep going and keep getting that feedback. In terms of integrating with everybody in the company, that was a little more challenging. So there was a team that was dedicated to doing nothing but building the product continuously. And when I first started with them, they were getting one build per day, or sometimes not one build a day because maybe it would break. And then they had to contact the programmer whose check-in broke the build and have them fix it. So there was quite a long delay there. And they improved that process within the 6 months I was there to where they were getting two builds a day fairly reliably, which is not too bad. But obviously, if you're on a team, you can't wait more than a day, you know, in between builds to test, because your team is checking in many times a day. So you need to find a way to componentize your software so that at least you can build your part of the system and at least do some testing. Maybe you can't do the full integration testing, but you can still keep coding and testing and then get that big build once or twice a day. That's not the ideal situation, but it's pretty good. It's doable. And of course the goal is always to get it faster. But we've got so much technology. Hardware is cheap. Memory is cheap. There are all kinds of tools to help you run your tests in parallel and things like that. And so it just takes a little time and creativity to keep solving the problems.
So I guess you end up with something like a staged integration where you increase the certainty and the depth of the feedback with the test levels, that integration levels that are behind your first continuous integration server.
Right. And even within our little team, you know, we're running our unit tests every 10 minutes. Our functional tests and fitness, right now we're running them in sequence because we don't have enough slave machines to run them in parallel. So they're taking maybe a little over an hour to run, which isn't too bad. Mm-hmm. But our GUI smoke tests, which actually we have still a lot of legacy code, and so our GUI tests do still find a lot of regressions. And those are taking 2.5 hours to run, which is really unacceptable for us. So we've got some more slave machines on order, and we're going to just break the suites up and run them in parallel. And that should solve our problem for now. I don't know what we'll do, you know, in another 2 years when we have, maybe we'll have twice as many tests. I don't know, but we'll worry about that when we get there.
What are some of the key lessons learned that you experienced over the past years?
One is the test automation design. So I talked about that already, that it's so important to have good design of your automated tests. But the other one is really at an organizational level, a cultural level, is each team needs to have slack time. They need to have time to learn. They need to have time to experiment. And the organizational culture really has to tolerate making mistakes. If you have an environment where people are punished for making a mistake, they're never going to experiment, and so they're never going to get any better. They're never going to innovate. They're just going to keep doing the same thing, and and they'll never be able to improve. And agile development, to me, the definition of agile is continuous improvement. We're always looking back at how did that go and how could we do it a little better. And we've got good people. That's what makes a good project. So how can we help these good people do a better job? And that takes time. And, you know, Google has their 20% rule where each person spends 20% of their time with some project of their own or learning something or experimenting. With our team, we take a two-week iteration every 6 months that we call the engineering sprint, where we can try out new tools or upgrade our existing tools or try some new approach. And then even each sprint, you know, we have some slack time built in to maybe try something a little different, try a new design, try a new tool with a particular piece of functionality. And our organization, our business people understand that that pays off because it allows us to keep doing better and keep working better and being more productive.
Did you have to prove that?
Well, we, in a way, I mean, they were willing to let us try it, but because our, when we started the agile development, the company was about to go out of business because the software was not being delivered at all. So they were pretty much willing to try anything. They were desperate enough. They were like, okay, well, whatever you say, we're going to try it your way. So, but they could see the results right away. So we could show, you know, our average velocity improves after one of these engineering sprints because we've been able to do big refactorings that we didn't have time to do, or we've gotten, you know, we went from Java 5 to Java 6 and maybe the performance is better or whatever. They can see the results. They do understand what it gets for them. And part of that is making everything visible. So, for example, we have one programmer every iteration who's responsible for all the production support, which isn't necessarily bugs. It's usually somebody making a mistake and needing help fixing it. And they can see how much time is that person having to spend on the production support versus if there's not a lot of production problems, then that person can work on new stories. And that's very visible to the business. By making that visible, they can understand, oh, we need the investment to reduce the production support time so that we can get new features faster. And
I guess that's an important point for us engineers, that we need to really follow the motto, do good and talk about mm-hmm. it. In order to really improve our engineering freedom and efficiency at the end of the
exactly.
day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it makes our job a lot more enjoyable too. And, you know, what's the bottom line? We should be enjoying our work. We'll do a better job when we do and have more fun.
Right. That is what I said the other day as well. The job work has to be fun in order to produce good quality software.
Yeah.
Totally agree. You mentioned the topic of test automation design. Mm-hmm. Anything left you want to share on that end?
It's my experience that the GUI testing automation is, for some reason, programmers don't like doing that. It usually falls more to the testers to do that test automation. But in teams where the programmers have paired with the testers to automate the GUI tests, the design of those tests is so much better because the programmers are applying their good object-oriented design. And whereas myself, you know, my coding experience comes back from the old, you know, structured programming days. And I'm not that great at object-oriented design. So on my own, I'll do an okay job, but I'm not going to do the best job of designing the automated test code. So if I can pair with a programmer, I'm going to be a lot better off. Now, there are people around who are programmers and testers, and they can do both without any help. But there are not a lot of people around like that. And so I also think it's important to train the testers in the basic design concepts to give them some help, because we had all these years of these magical, quote-unquote, magical capture playback tools that were supposed to solve all the test automation problems. And of course they didn't, because if you capture a test script and play it back, well, that's inherently going to be a bad design. It's full of duplicated, your suites are full of duplicated code, and you'll never be able to make those, keep those going in the long run. And so we've seen how that works. It doesn't work very well. So we need to train our testers who are doing the automation in good design, and then the programmers need to help them help them with that design and keep it a good object-oriented design, so that if we need to make a change or add something or take something away, we only have to do it maybe in one place and not in 200 different scripts. And, you know, I've learned from the School of Hard Knocks of doing things the wrong way and paying the price for it. And not everybody should have to do that.
What would be your recommendation to testers who just entered the HL development, who are new to HL development, and how they can become really good, proficient HL testers?
Well, one thing is that they need to adopt the right attitude or the right mindset to say, rather than to say, well, I'm going to see how many bugs I can find, ask the question, how can I help my team to do a better job and deliver a better product? And to do that, you have to learn. So I tell testers who are new to Agile, there are a lot of online resources. There are a lot of great books that you can get. Find your local testing user group or your local Agile user group and start going to the meetings. Join one of the online clubs. There's a software testing club and weekend testers. Those are places where you can go, and it's a fun way to learn some new skills. So be learning all the time. Take advantage of every opportunity to learn. It takes time, sure, but hopefully you're working on an Agile team where you work at a sustainable pace and you have the time to do it. But it's also fun, and if you're passionate about your work, then you're willing to spend a little bit of your free time doing some of these activities and learning. The world of testing is exploding. I think one thing that Agile has done is to really turn around the world of testing. Now developers are all test infected. They're very interested in testing. So you've got a whole new world of people looking at test tools and creating better test tools and better testing approaches and new ideas about testing. And that's really exciting. And if you're going to keep up, then you're going to have to spend some time to pay attention to what is the latest trend. Is it something that might be useful for your team? Why don't you learn about it and experiment with it and try it? I'm always evaluating new tools, even though we're happy with the test tools that we have, because, you know, you never know. There could be something that could save you time or be a better solution. And we always have to be open-minded about that. So being open-minded, having a great attitude, and be willing to do anything to help. You know, if I see some text that's misspelled on a page, I'm perfectly capable of going into the source code and fixing that myself. I don't have to file a bug for it. I can fix some of the SQL queries if I see there's a problem in the SQL query. So I don't do a lot of bug fixing because, you know, I'm not a Java developer or .NET developer, but, you know, if there's a little problem, I think it's fun to do something that's not in my job description.
And all that is possible due to the collective code ownership. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then the same with if a business person needs help, I know a lot about the system because I test all parts of the system. So I'm really happy to go sit with them and see what they need help with or research how some piece of code works. Fortunately, we have our nice fitness tests that prove how the code works. So I don't have to rely on documentation. I can actually look at a working test and I can answer those questions. So there's nothing on an Agile team, you know, everything is your job. So you don't ever have the chance to say, well, that's not my job, I'm not concerned with it. And I think that's a great thing.
You mentioned now several times the fitness test. Do you have a dedicated framework for that? Is it related to the fit of Ward Cunningham that he did in the past?
Yeah, fitness is based on, well, it originally was based on fit from Ward Cunningham. Bob Martin and Michael Martin developed fitness, and now there are many contributors around the world. And it's, you can also now run fitness based on SLIM, which is something that came from Bob Martin. And it's just a way to specify your tests using a wiki. And you can do it in tabular format or scenario format. It's a pretty flexible tool. And we've really liked it because it allows you to embed narrative along with the test. And because the tests are part of our continuous integration, they have to stay green. So if a functionality changes, we have to change the test. Whereas in the old days, if you were just relying on documentation, you know, people would forget to go update the documentation. And pretty soon, nobody knew why a particular code worked the way it worked. And that knowledge base is really important to us. And now, of course, there are other great tools now that will do the same kind of thing for you. But Fitness was the first one I discovered that really provided that advantage. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're close to the end of the episode. Anything you like to share with our listeners? Any final words?
Gosh, what words of wisdom could I impart to you? I guess just the importance, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, then you already are somebody who likes to learn. And for me, that's the most fun part of our jobs, is that we're always getting to do new things. And we don't have too much repetitive, tedious work because we automate that stuff. And then we can go on and do the exciting exploratory testing and the exciting learning that makes every day, you know, a fun challenge. So just keep learning and keep collaborating and finding good ways to do that.
Very nice. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Bye.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Software Engineering Radio. Software Engineering Radio is an educational program brought to you by Hillside Europe. If you want more information about the podcast and all the other episodes, visit our website at se-radio.net. If you want to support us, you can donate to the SE Radio team via the website, or you can advertise for SE Radio, for example, by clicking on the Dig Reddit Delicious links and the /dot button. To contact the team, please send email to team@se-radio.net, or if it is specific to an episode, please use the comments facility on the website so other people can react to your comments. This episode of SE Radio, as well as all other episodes, are licensed under the Creative Commons 2.5 license. Please see the website for details. Thanks to Charlie Crow and the Podsafe Music Network for the music used in this show. The song is called Vegas Hard Rock Shuffle.